following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Well, it appears I need to bring down the level. YouTube, you guys are my producers in the chat room. So I guess we were over-modulating. So, you know, I'm still dealing with resetting up everything. Is it better now? Now it's okay. The input into YouTube was just way too hot. So I had to bring everything down. So hopefully that did the trick. You know, it's always a work in progress. Anyway, we're kind of celebrating today because, I didn't realize it was coming today. We have other things to talk about. But the jury in the case that was hearing the Alex Jones damages trial, where were they? I think they were in Massachusetts, but I could be wrong. In New England somewhere, right? They handed down their verdict. They awarded damages. And boy, were there damages. So I was scribbling down notes as it went along. And I was for some reason, I thought there were only like four defendants, four plaintiffs in this case. But boy, was I wrong, because I know some of the, you know, it's been 10 years. 10 years. So some of the families, unfortunately, have split. That's what, you know, the death of a child will do to you. But the first one they announced to Parker, Mr. Parker, for defamation and slander, $60 million. Yeah. And then for emotional distress, past and future, another $60 million. That was just for one. The other awards weren't quite as high, but they were up there. The next guy, $55 million, $54 million, $28.8 million, $57.6 million. It added up to $965 million in damages to be awarded by Alex Jones and his shitty production company, the people that churn out that dreck, that crap, that inflicted terror upon terror on these families. I mean, just the horror of having your child murdered in a mass shooting at their school where they should be safe is, I mean, that's unthinkable enough. But then to have this cretin, this just true walking piece of human shit turn on you and accuse you of making it up and then getting all of his, you know, his brain damaged followers to go after you. For 10 years these families have been dealing with this. 10 years. So it is time, it is past time for this man to pay. Now, the unfortunate thing, well, there's a lot of unfortunate things, and now I can't find it. So hold on, let me find this video because it's going to blow your mind. I almost can't believe this, but it did. I thought I retweeted. Oh, here it is. I do have it. All right, so I'm going to show a video. If you're watching on a video feed, you'll hear it. For those of you just, you know, listening to, say, progressivevoices.com, oh, and it looks like there's no sound going to Progressive Voices. What happened here? Uh-huh. No, that's not it. Boy, I'm all over the place today, aren't I? Let me try one more thing, because Progressive Voices has no audio. And it looks like they're not going to get my audio today. Damn. I got to figure out another way to get Progressive Voices the audio. Maybe they're getting it. They're getting it directly. It's just not going to my, okay, I'll fix that later. If you're trying to listen to my stream, it's not working, but Progressive Voices apparently has it. Okay, so if you're watching, I mean, if you're listening, what we're seeing is the stream from InfoWars. And I guess you have to say it with that guttural throat thing. InfoWars. Alex Jones, InfoWars. Because that's how he talks. God, it hurts. How does somebody do that all the time? Anyway, so somebody named Brandy Zadrozny tweeted this out. And let me enlarge this. It's only 11 seconds, but boy, does it pack a punch. So here is what happened. So this is what went on. So Alex Jones didn't show up for the verdict to be read today. He went to do his show, and he's on the air as the verdict is being read. And this is what he says in real time as the verdict's being, and as the damages are being awarded to these families. It goes like this right here.
$1,000.
$57 million, $20 million, $50 million, $80 million, $100 million, blah, blah. You get $1 million, you get $100 million, you get $50 million.
Slander damages,
okay, and that's all that's there. So, poor Alex. $50 million, $100 million, yeah. And then apparently he said something to the effect of, none of them are going to see a cent. Really? Do these people actually think they're getting any of this money? That is deplorable. That is disgusting. And this man, you know, I say it all the time because I firmly believe it. Karma is a bitch. It's going to come back and bite him on the ass. I hope. It's almost like he planned to be on air. Sound level falling now. Okay. All right. This will be better. All right. So now I'm going to bring it up a little bit. I rebuilt my entire computer this weekend. It's not the studio this time. It was the computer. So just so you know, that it should come back up again, Gary. You guys are my producer. So that should be better. So I'll let the YouTube chat room let me know. But we should be good now. Because there's no overmodulation, the levels are a good level, and like that. All right, so let me tell you what's going on today. Before I knew we were going to get the verdict in the Alex Jones thing, and by the way, there's still another trial to happen. So there was the one in Texas a month or two ago that I think awarded $40 million to the one plaintiff, or one or two, and this one, $965 million. And then it's going to be still one more. So we're over $1 billion now. Now, that piece of crap has been hiding his money. He put some in his wife's name and his mother and who knows. And he plays like bankrupt. Well, now he's really bankrupt. And I think if he can't pay it off, I saw Howie Klein tweeted, what happens if he can't pay these people? Well, first of all, he can liquidate InfoWars and get that going, right? Liquidate it and give the money to those people because they deserve it. And then, you know what? Maybe put Alex up in a little apartment. A studio is good enough for him. Little studio, and make him work every day. Not on InfoWars because that's going down. You know, make him work at a 7-Eleven or something from a 12-hour shift. 6 days a week, we'll give him a day off, and all the money goes to these families for the rest of his life. But you know what he said after the clip I played for you? He said, we're not going to stop. They think they can stop me from talking about Uvalde and Parkland. So he wants to inflict terror on other families who've already been through the worst terror. You know, he said, another comment he made was, oh, this must be what hell is like. No, hell is what he inflicted on these families when he murdered 20 babies. 20 babies. And now he wants to go after the Parkland families. By the way, the Parkland jury has the case today. They finished their closing arguments. So if you weren't paying attention to that, you know, I live next door to Parkland. I'm in Coral Springs, Florida. We are like sister cities. We share a police department. So anyway, so it's very much in my face. And they've been having the trial here. Now, it's not the murder trial. He pleaded guilty to 17 murders and 17 attempted murders. And so all this 6-week trial is for, is to determine whether he's put to death or spends the rest of his life in jail. That's all. And this trial went on for 6 weeks. So today they finished the closing arguments, the closing statements, and the jury has the case. So we could get a verdict anytime. Joby says, dude is going to get offed. You know what? I'm not a big believer in the death penalty, but for him, nothing is too good. Somebody else said something. All the money in the world can't compensate them for the horrors they've been through. He belongs in prison at hard labor. Well, that's true. No, and you know what? All the money in the world can't compensate them. You know what can? Seeing InfoWars blown up. Take it off. Get rid of it because it's junk. You know, why people listen to that noise, I do not. Yeah, Spence is asking, is this the killer that I was talking about? And he named him. Yeah, that's who I'm talking about, Spence, but I don't say his name. I don't know if you've been around much, but let me tell you how close we were to this. My daughter graduated from high school the year before the Parkland shootings. She did not go to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. She went to a different school. We have four high schools in this area, serving this area, because it's so populated. And yet we're a suburb of Fort Lauderdale. Anyway, my kid was not a great student. And she was, you know, she was 2 credits shy of graduating, and she was way behind. And so she was in danger of not graduating. But they had a program that is usually reserved for, you know, for the trouble kids who otherwise would be expelled or sent home. It's called OCLC, Off-Campus Learning Center. And basically in one of the schools, it wasn't hers. It wasn't Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. It was another one called Terra Vella. They have a room where kids do this off-campus learning. And basically they each have a laptop. They work at their own pace and they, you know, do their thing. She needed to finish up 2 more credits. So she did. Well, she finished up, she graduated, all is good. The next year, the shooting happens. We're sitting and watching TV, and this murderer, this killer, his face is shown on TV, and Allison said, oh my God, I know him. And I'm like, you what? And she said, Mom, he was in my OCLC room. He sat like 2 seats down from me, and there was nobody in between us. If I tell you that my stomach dropped, like I had to pick it up off the floor, we don't know what precarious situations we're in until, you know, thankfully I didn't know at the time, or I would have, if I knew that my kid is sitting next to somebody who's going to pull out an AR-15 and murder 17 kids in a school and maim horribly 17 more. By the way, you don't hear a lot about those kids who were injured in these mass shootings. But if you get shot by an AR-15, those are not minor injuries. Those guns, those bullets tear you apart from the inside. So when you're hurt, when you're injured, some of those people have horrible injuries that stay with them for the rest of their lives. So I'm just saying, you know, it's horrific. And so, you know, that's on my mind today, too, because that went to the jury. So who knows? We could get yet another verdict today. All right. So anyway, what I started to tell you before I veered off to tell you that story is who our guest is today. Actually, I wasn't even going to have a guest today because tomorrow is the January 6th hearing. Oh, I got to call Howie and tell him we're off. Howie Klein is usually my guest on Thursdays, but I'm going to preempt him tomorrow because we've got a hearing. What will likely be the final hearing from this House Select Committee investigating the events surrounding January 6th, because we know it wasn't only January 6th. It'll certainly be the last one before the election, but maybe the last one totally. This committee will be disbanded at the end of the year, because this is the end of the 117th Congress. Each session of Congress goes for 2 years. And then when the midterms or the general election happens and they elect a new crop, the next session comes in. So every 2 years, a new session begins. By the same token, this committee will end, even if the Democrats retain control of the House, and maybe they could, launch a new probe, but hopefully they'll get all their work done here, and then it's the Justice Department that gets to take over. But there's a change in personnel. There could be a change in leadership. We'll see what happens. But this committee is wrapping up. They're saying there will not be any witnesses, any live witnesses in tomorrow's hearing, just that, they're going to, I guess this will be like their closing statement. They're going to try to tie it all together. They still are going to release a report. Yeah, Jimmy's saying, I hope there's more than one more hearing. The thing is, this will be the last one before the election. And I guess a lot depends on what happens in the election. They still need to write the final reports. So, it might be it. It might be it. But the Justice Department investigation will go on. The other prosecutions will go on. Oh, and by the way, guess what happened today? Remember E. Jean Carroll, the author who accused the former guy of raping her in a department store dressing room some years ago? And he tried to get Bill Barr to defend, like get the government to defend against it. Anyway, part of the case was like thrown out. However, what E. G. Carroll won was a deposition. Oh yes, the orange one must sit for a deposition under oath 1 week from today. Put that in your calendar. 1 week from today, it'll be October 19th. Donald Trump sits for a deposition. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. Okay, so that's something to look forward to next Wednesday. But now, on to what I was telling you before I kept interrupting myself. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter way too much. Yes, I have a problem, and if Elon Musk buys it, I'll have to break myself of that habit because, ew. But one of the people I follow is Jeff Charlotte. And you know who Jeff Charlotte is, even if you don't know his name. Jeff Charlotte is a journalist, an author, a college professor. Some of his books, he wrote The Family and he wrote C Street. And those two books formed the basis of the Netflix docuseries, The Family. That's Jeff Charlotte. And he's written a number of great books. He's written a lot of magazine articles for everyone from Esquire to Vanity Fair to Rolling Stone and beyond. And he's got a new book on the way that we'll talk to him about. Anyway, I saw him on Twitter today. He's always, provocative. And with so much going on, I thought, well, maybe Jeff will come on today and weigh in on where we are. We are 4 weeks out from Election Day. We have this former guy who is still lying every time he opens his damn mouth. And an inordinate number of Americans believe his crap. And, and he's got people, 299 Republican election deniers on the ballot running for office. And they could get in. And their goal is to do what they didn't accomplish last time, to have people in place as secretaries of state. And in the case of a state government, they're the ones who run the election. Who can? And they're saying they can then get those people. And so they can do the dirty work that the legitimate election supervisors and secretaries of state wouldn't do in 2020 and steal the election for it. All the while they say, stop the steal, when they're the ones stealing. You see, this is how opposite world works. You understand the theory behind opposite world, right?
Thought you knew. You never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
What's opposite world? You want to hear a great example of opposite world? You'll love this. So, I'm in Florida. I did not go to the University of Florida in Gainesville, where most of my friends went and where I probably should have gone. I went to the University of South Florida, which was in Tampa. And when I went to college in the olden days, basically, if you graduated from a Florida high school, you could take your choice and go to any of the Florida State universities. And it was cheap. It was dirt cheap. I mean, tuition was next to nothing. My parents paid for it. I didn't have to take out a student loan because it was affordable. You could go to a state university and not break the bank. Anyway, how things have changed. But so they announced, Ben Sasse, senator from Nebraska, announced the other day that he would be stepping down. He's going to resign because he's going to go become the president of the University of Florida. Ben Sasse? And apparently, you know, more on death sentence, our governor passed a put some rule in. I don't know, he gets these laws through. I know he's not in the legislature. He doesn't really have the power to write laws, but so be it. To make the process for picking a university president secret so that the students, the community, the state, the taxpayers had no idea what was going on. And so apparently this was done not in the sunshine. We have a sunshine law here that all public business has to be done in the sunshine, but not under DeSantis. So they did it under cover of night or darkness or closet or whatever. And apparently Ben Sasse is the last man standing. So all of a sudden he's going to be the new president of the University of Florida. Well, not if the students of the University of Florida have anything to say about it. So this was the scene. Not that. This was the scene in the student union yesterday.
Ben Sasse has got to go, baby.
Hey, hey, ho, ho.
Ben Sasse has got to go, baby.
Hey, hey, ho, ho. Ben Sasse has got to go. So you get it, right? You get the, that's going on outside. Ben Sasse is inside saying this.
They have good rhythm. You got to give them that. A lot of times you get protesters and they're just a little bit off. You know,
seriously?
They're clapping on the 1 and 3 versus the 2 and 4 or vice versa. But I mean, they feel like they have their act together.
Oh, my God. That is what Ben Sasse comments on. Not that they're saying, Ben Sasse has got to go, but that they are doing it in time and in rhythm. That's opposite world. That is opposite world. That is sickening. You know, opposite world is like, Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake.
We know that God did not create us to be equal to men.
What?
You know what? We aren't equal to men. Yeah. Women are different than men. We don't want to be equal to them because we are not the same.
Oh, my God. Carrie Lake. She's seriously dangerous. Carrie Lake is the Republican nominee for governor in Arizona. And there she is saying, women are not equal to men. Excuse me? Maybe it was it Herschel Walker or one of these other maggots who said, no, I know what a woman is. She comes from the rib of a man. And then there's Herschel Walker. You know, we can't get past a day without Herschel Walker just embarrassing the country. Can you imagine who you have to be to vote for this man over Raphael Warnock? So he's in Georgia. He's doing, a rally or giving a speech or something. And they send a couple of other senators to, I don't know, help him, to be there for him. So in this video I'm about to show you, you'll see there's Herschel Walker speaking on the microphone. And behind him, Tom Cotton and Rick, what's his name? Rick Scott. Yeah, from Florida. The Medicare fraudster. The guy who ran Columbia HCA, Hospital Corporation of America, and was guilty of the biggest Medicare fraud on our nation in history. That's who Florida elected to the U.S. Senate and governor for 2 terms. Go figure. Anyway, so they are the cavalry and they go to Georgia to stand behind Herschel Walker to try to, get him back on track because he's dealing with, stories of forcing his girlfriend, his pregnant girlfriend, to get an abortion. And now we find out today she had to go after him for the money because he promised to pay for it and she didn't. It just never ends. But then yesterday, I guess this was, he decided to tell a story. Maybe somebody can explain to me what this story was supposed to signify. But here, you listen.
And I'm here to tell you it's not. So I've been telling this little story.
Yeah.
About this bull out in the field.
A bull out
in
the field.
With six cows.
Yeah.
And three of them are pregnant.
Three of them are pregnant.
So you know he got something going on.
Oh, yeah.
But and all he can.
You got, look at the faces behind Herschel. Herschel. You got Tom Cotton and Rick Scott. And when he talks about the three cows being pregnant, they both put a face on like, oh, what are you doing, man? Shut the fuck up. But he doesn't, because it continues like this.
What about is kept his nose against the fence looking at three other cows that then blown to him.
What?
Now all he had to do is eat grass.
Yeah.
But no. He thought something was better somewhere else.
What?
So he decided, I want to get over there. So one day he measured that fence up. And he said, I think I can jump this.
I can jump
this. So that day came where he got back.
Yeah.
And he got back, and as he took off running, he dove over that fence, and his belly got cut up onto the bottom. But as he made it over on the other side, he shook it off and got so excited about it. And he ran to the top of that hill, but when he got up there, he realized they were bulls too. So what I'm telling you.
What? You're telling us what?
Don't think something is better somewhere else. This is the greatest country in the world today.
What the hell?
And the reason why is the people. The reason why is the people.
What the hell was that supposed to mean? And he said nothing, except he got in like, oh, there were three cows, they're pregnant, and there were three more over there, and you got something going on. Who is this? And how could anybody in their right mind vote for him? That's a kind of a rhetorical question, though I would like an answer. You see, here's the question, or here's the conundrum. The polls have tightened. Herschel Walker is just about even, statistically speaking, with Raphael Warnock. Now, look, I know Georgia is the land of deliverance and all that, but not everybody there is crazy, are you? I'm just blown away. Yeah, Chris, as I heard, sounds not words. And that's how it usually is with me, with this guy. But I decided I needed to listen to what he was saying here to see if it makes sense. It doesn't make sense. Opposite world. Hey, I do have more kind of good news. So I told you about the former guy going to sit for a deposition a week from today in the E. Jean Carroll case. Senator Ed Markey had an interesting tweet today. He said, U.S. Treasury responded to my letter confirming that it will investigate at Governor Ron DeSantis' use of COVID relief funds to cruelly transport immigrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard under false pretenses and without any consideration for their personal dignity or basic needs. And then he retweeted Sarah Benincourt, who wrote, Treasury Department is auditing and investigating, quote, as quickly as possible, Florida Governor DeSantis's potential misuse of taxpayer funds designated for pandemic relief in order to transport 50 immigrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard under false pretenses. So thank you, Senator Markey. And he has standing to do this because Senator Markey represents Massachusetts. And that's where Martha's Vineyard is. Texas, I don't know, but I understand that the cretin Greg Abbott is not happy that moron death sentence is going in and kidnapping his refugees and sending them himself, because that's what Greg Abbott likes to do. Come on, man. Oh, something else I got to talk about. It's in What's News today, but I just got to say it. How heinous are the people at Fox? How disgusting a person does one have to be to play an audio file stolen, a voicemail between a father and his son who's in trouble? Well, apparently that's what Sean Hannity did. Sean Hannity on the Fox Not News channel apparently yesterday really got off on playing this clip that was allegedly, if I can find it, allegedly found on, where are you, buddy? Maybe I'll have it over here. On the laptop. Who knew? Right, that the laptop thing, that it was actually his laptop. But whether it was or not, hold on. Now I can't find this clip, and it's kind of, oh, here it is. Okay. So on the alleged Hunter Biden laptop, there was a recording of a voicemail left by Joe Biden, who at the time in 2018 was a private citizen, right? Private citizen Joe Biden to his son, also a private citizen. And Fox, not news, ran this audio into the ground, and they played it, and they even transcribed it and put the transcription on the Chyron so you could read the words. My question is, what was he trying to prove? What was he trying to say? Because I listen to this, and what I hear is a concerned father who really, really loves his son. Right? Here's what it said.
It's Dad.
It's Dad.
I'm telling you, I love you. I love you more than the whole world, pal. Can I get some help? I don't know what to do. I know you don't either, but I'm here no matter what you need. No matter what you need, I love you.
I love you. He's talking to his troubled son. Obviously emotional. Obviously saying, anything I can do for you, you're my son and I love you, and that's what's most important. And those cretins, what, they put it up there to say what? Because what they accomplished is that they proved that Joe Biden is actually like a guy who you'd want for your father to be. Or if you're a father, that's what you aspire to be. He is a caring, loving father. Can you imagine if it was the former guy and his drug-addled son? And we've seen it. I mean, you've seen the junior, cocaine-fueled videos. I don't think Donald would call and say, "I love you. I love you to the world. I love you." What did he say? The world, to the world and back. Or wait, I got to hear it again because it was just beautiful.
It's Dad. I called and told you I love you. I love you more than the whole world, pal.
I love you more than the whole world, pal. They're making fun of this? That just shows the difference between them and us. That is a father hurting for his child, his son who's hurting, and he cares. And he's in pain because of what his son is going through. Why they think that's fodder for ridicule, I think just shows a difference between who they are and who we are. Because I hear that, and I hear a compassionate, loving, wonderful father. I guess that's the difference. All right. Our guest is here, and I'm always, always thrilled to welcome Jeff Charlotte to the program. Jeff Charlotte is a journalist. He's an author of numerous books. He's a professor. He writes these magazine articles that take you in. Jeff, it may have been Esquire, it may have been GQ. You went to Russia and you sort of infiltrated the LGBTQ community, which is very much undercover, and got to know these people. You have a way of pulling out the humanity from situations that we wouldn't otherwise get a taste of. So I remain a big fan of yours. So I'm so glad you're joining us today. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's always good to talk with you, Nicole.
Always good to have you. Now, I love watching your Twitter interactions because you can't control who's on the other end. And boy, some of those people, we all have them, people who push back on everything you say. But, you know, you made a lot of good points. And I thought, let me talk to Jeff about this. And then I thought we could talk about the fact that tomorrow is what will likely be the final January 6th hearing for the House Select Committee anyway. And what I worry about 4 weeks out from the election is that the stuff they were doing, the stuff that they're unmasking in these hearings, they're still doing. This coup is not done. it's still happening. And when I asked you about that, and you responded by saying that you're not sure that the audience is understanding that how close we are to total. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said if something big doesn't change, we could wind up with Trump back in office in 2025. That's your fear too, huh?
That's where we're headed now. We're absolutely headed toward that now, and I think the audience. I'm speaking of liberals and the left broadly because I get this pushback a lot because I write on pretty scary folks and so on. I'm always hearing, well, those folks are marginal. They're just wing nuts. Or you went and you, and it's funny because fascists will say the same thing. They'll say, well, you just found the one guy who is arming up. And I'm like, well, here's 20 other guys. Well, you just found the 20 other guys. Well, here's 20 more. You know, it's not hard to find militant fascism right now. And I think that what happened is that we got so much energy from the idea that, wait a minute, maybe things could go better in the Senate than we thought. So we're getting pulled back into the perennial sort of electoral vortex, which works well enough in normal times. These are not
normal times. That's the key phrase there, right?
Yeah, I don't think the situation, my read of the situation right now is that it's not nearly as good as people say. I think the Republicans are going to win a lot. And I think we look at Secretary of State races all across the country where Democrats aren't even showing up.
Yeah.
State legislatures, not even showing up. We have a situation where the Democratic National Party, they're stuck by their donors. And the donors, Democratic donors, they really do like to give to the big national races where you can brag and, and here's a picture of me and Raphael Warnock, even more important than that, the most important race right now to me, Secretary of State in Arizona, Mark Fincham versus Adrian Fontes. You want to give money out there, give money to Adrian Fontes. He's not my kind of Democrat. He's a kind of a centrist Democrat. But Mark Fincham, who is his opponent and who is leading, is an oath keeper. And Arizona's gone. People aren't seeing this. We could win the Senate. We could even hold on to the House. And right now, Trump's still cruising to a victory. He's cruising to a victory. The coup that began is not just still going on. It's growing.
Wow. Now, you have a new book coming out in March. And so, I don't know anything about it except what's on your bio on Twitter. And it says, coming in March, the new book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Is this what it's about?
Yeah, this is where I think we're at right now is, and I think it's best to understand these things in terms of a slow civil war. Maybe a model for some who are familiar with is the Troubles in Northern Ireland, which were sometimes fairly hot and sometimes fairly cool. But there's more violence already going on. And because it's isolated here and there, we don't really see it. No one has done the tally of how many families have been destroyed by QAnon-related violence right now. We know there's a couple of very high-profile murders. I write in the book about one, a woman, she tried to commit some murders. She failed. That didn't make national news. It barely made local news. That's happening. I have a neighbor here in Vermont. Thank God they caught him with his arsenal before he was able to execute his plan of racist and anti-Semitic attacks. He was the son of the former head of the Vermont Republican Party. Whoa. That didn't make national news. No. Again, barely made local news. All that's going on right now, that's simmering wherever I travel around the country. And I go and I talk to the fascists. They're easy to find these days. They fly fat flags.
too.
They're armed. They're armed and they're arming up and they're preparing. That doesn't mean this is going to happen. And I actually want to say, too, I think what a lot of liberals reassure themselves, like, well, those militias are in for a big surprise when they meet the 82nd Airborne. Yeah, that's true. I agree. The militias are not the risk. the risk is the militias as catalyst for a split in the military. And that is a real risk.
Right. Because we learned, we've seen it in a lot of, as these trials are unfolding, there are many people who were part of the insurrection on January 6th who are military, who are law enforcement.
I wouldn't even put a whole lot. I mean, these are not powerful. These are not powerful people. I mean, years ago, I wrote about fundamentalism in the military. You know, and in all cases, pay attention to the colonels. Coups are historically undertaken by colonels, officers who are thwarted in their rise. And that's where, you know, these guys who was a veteran or whatever, and he's a low ranking guy, and he was at January 6th. I'm not actually too worried about that.
Okay.
I'm more worried about a situation if we have someone arrested for an abortion related thing in one state and they're from another state, and now they're facing, you know, they're facing years in prison in Texas, and New York says, give them back. That's our citizen. Or we are looking at where Greg Abbott or Ron DeSantis might say, I'm going to make a name for myself, show myself more Trumpy than Trump. By defying the federal government. I mean, they're already at the point of daring federal troops, right?
Yeah.
And I think actually I will give Biden credit for his restraint, dealing with National Guard units that wouldn't follow orders on vaccination, which were essentially in mutiny. All those things can be sparks. So the book is called The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. It's partly about how we got there, and it's partly about what's happening now. But it's coming in March, so it's ways off. I'm worried my title might be anachronistic by the time it comes out. But we can avoid it. But what we can't avoid it, we've got to stop this thing of telling ourselves. I hear it all the time when I report on these guys. I come back from some scary militia place and says, I bet they were all 300 pounds. Well, aside from like the body shaming, which isn't so cool.
Right.
And aside from the fact that if you got a gun, it really doesn't matter how much you weigh. The bad news is I've seen, no, they're not. There's some organization out there. And we see enough, when we see the right screw up, it reassures us of this idea of the Keystone Cops, right?
Uh-huh. Right. But that's not who they are.
Some of them are.
Right. So, there are
some of them are
be
not.
Some. Right, right.
You know who's not a Keystone Cop is Mitch McConnell. Look at that guy. That guy keeps winning.
Right.
I mean,
even
why
when he knows that he shouldn't, even when he knows that he's backing the wrong people, it's about the power. We need to keep power. It doesn't matter if I'm telling you to get behind Donald Trump, who is, you know, one of the worst people in the world.
But Mitch McConnell's one of the worst people.
Yes, he is.
And to me, I don't care
about.
They
are all bad.
Yep, one of the things I want, look, we have a few years to stop Trump from coming back. Here's what I recommend. This is my program. Stop talking about hypocrisy. It ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. It never has. In American history, it hasn't worked. It's for you. It makes you feel better. It doesn't help the right. We're seeing that with Herschel Walker. Ugh. They're so hypocritical. So what?
Right. What else is new? Right.
For once, the fascists are actually being a little bit more mature. They're like, yeah, but I'm about the policy. And then you go and you watch Fox News and you can find out Ralph B.L. Warnock's got some stuff in his past, too, that is a little bit troublesome. Right. And there's like.
Can't believe anything they say, too. Yeah. So he has. He's
divorced.
No,
he does. We can. We have to also. The other thing. It's time for the left to stop hating the media as much as the right does. Every time I go out there, and I'm a media critic too, right? So I go out there and I say on Twitter or something, here's something that the New York Times or the Washington Post got wrong. I will be deluged by people telling me that they canceled their subscription. Well, the good news is they probably never had a subscription.
That's true.
But we are at such a point of media literacy. You don't like that reporter. You're talking about an institution with 1,000 reporters, and most of what you know about the right is coming from those big resource institutions. Nicole, you and me can't do it. We don't have the resources. I'm not David Fairhold.
Nope.
I don't have all Washington Post behind me to go through those tax documents.
That's right.
We need those organizations.
Without a doubt. And
Trump
without a free media,
he wants to get rid of them.
Right. Without a free press, then you don't have a democracy. And that's why they're going after the press in the first place.
And the press will suck. This is the thing. People have to understand the press will suck. They will get it wrong. They will write bad headlines. They will write bad stories. Maggie Haberman.
Yep. enough said, right?
No, no, not enough said.
You got the book. Right, you're reading it. So
it's a valuable book. It's a valuable book. Has she screwed up many times? Yes.
So
is
have
she
we all,
done
right?
Incredible reporting. And do we know a lot because of the accident? It's complicated. It's not going to be a moral purity test, folks. You can't say, I will never read anything by Maggie Haberman again. Then you will not know what some of the threat is. She's not my favorite reporter. We need to read work by people that we don't necessarily like.
And I hear what you're saying. And I'm that way with the New York Times, with the Washington Post. And yes, I have subscriptions, even though I get angry at times because of some of what they publish. That's normal. But, you know, I'd call Fox not news, because they're not news. Maybe once in a while, Bret Baier will actually tell a real news story, but they make shit up all the time, and they call themselves news, and they can get away with it because they're not over the air.
We've been saying this, and enough with the Fox News things. First of all, Fox is not that, is losing power on the right.
Because people are dying.
There's plenty of fascists who will never watch Fox News. They hate it as much.
There's worse places to.
But also, we need the correct assessment. One of the things that Fox did well in the beginning of the Ukraine war, they did good reporting from Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that means? That means there are people sitting there watching. They're seeing this good reporting. They're seeing reporters live on the ground there. They're saying, oh, I can trust this because of this. That's how the way fascism works is you say a thing that's verifiable, right? Mm-hmm. And the person says, yeah, that's true. And then you throw in some phoniness. Mm-hmm. And the person says, well, that must be true too.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, we keep fighting the war with Fox News. Who on the left is going to say, God, Nicole, no one in your audience is saying, wait a minute, I shouldn't watch Fox News.
Right.
We
know they know.
We know.
Right. Right.
And we got it. We got to leave that stuff behind. And I'm not entirely sure what we replace it with, what kind of organizing we replace it with. But what I know is that we've got right now, we are filling a lot of our energy on fighting hypocrisy, fighting Maggie Haberman, fighting Fox News, instead of fighting the fascists. Mm-hmm. Right now, I saw on Twitter a huge battle with Sarah Silverman.
Who has done
some messed up stuff. But Kanye's out there calling, saying DEFCON 3.
Yep.
And Tucker Carlson is going out there exploiting it. So Sarah Silverman may or may not suck. I don't know. But I know Tucker Carlson does.
That's right.
It's time. It's time. I'm very, very concerned. I know what the state of fascism is. I'm concerned about the state of the left. We are not in good shape.
No,
we're not.
We're not. But neither is the right. So one of the areas that you've delved into a lot and that most people know you for is your work investigating, learning what goes on with the family on C Street. You wrote the book, The Family. You wrote the book, C Street. The docuseries on Netflix, The Family, was made from your work. So many of them buy into this, but it's not an issue that's only the Republicans. There are Democrats who are members of the family who participate in the Breyer breakfast and the other secretive stuff they do. And yet I think they're with me saying, wait a minute, separation of church and state. You want to do away with it. They want to tell us that wasn't the intention of the framers of the Constitution at all. Wait a minute. Now we're going into opposite world. Where is the line? Does the family break through these lines where Hillary Clinton can be with a Bill Frist and do whatever they did in the family?
No, the family is and remains a deeply anti-democratic malignant force. Chris Coons, Democratic senator from
Delaware,
close Biden ally and close family member who has helped get Kavanaugh through. It was Chris Coons. You may remember in the second impeachment, we saw it live on TV. They stopped. It turns out, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we are going to call witnesses. Maybe this thing is actually going to work. Chris Coons walks over to Senator James Lankford, Republican from Oklahoma, They are both inner circle members of the family. They have a little private conference and they come out with this bipartisan decision. We got to get home for Valentine's Day.
Oh, God.
Right. So no, that's not where the fight is at. That's not where the fight is at. And I think, frankly, the separation of church and state issue, the kind of fascism we're facing now, I think it's time for us to, I mean, boy, I'm really going to piss off your audience, because I'm learning stuff from Maggie Haberman's book about Trump's early years, just understanding, even after having studied this for a long time, as she goes through all of these crooked deals and reminding you of all the twists and turns of his ideology, which brings us back to a lot of good work on fascism and authoritarianism by Jason Stanley and Ruth Ben-Gadd. Oh, yeah. And it's not about issues. It is about power. And it's not enough for us to say, well, it's just about power for them. Yes, they say. There's nothing we can throw at fascism right now that insults them.
No.
Everything we say about them, they'll say, yes, that's right. You know, you don't even have any morals. Yes, that's right. So now the question is, it's as if we're still trying to hold on to a center that did not hold, right? We're still trying to get them back in the norms. Wait a minute. How dare you say that there's no separation of church and state? Like, we'll say whatever the hell we want to say. That's the fascism that we are contending with now. And a not insignificant part we've got to pay attention to. It's not majority. Not insignificant part is quite comfortable with the breakup of the United States. So, you know, appealing to the Constitution for them really doesn't work. They're like, yeah, let's get rid of it.
So Jeff, let me ask you this. We're talking with Jeff Charlotte, and I so appreciate your insight. There's a debate going on. Many of the Democrats who are running for office right now are honing in on, you know, they overturned Roe v. Wade. They're taking away our rights. They want to send us back to the 18th century. And then you had Bernie Sanders come out and say, you can't only do that. You got to talk about pocketbook issues. You got to give them a reason to vote. And there's a divide. I hear people say, stop preaching to the choir. Well, what am I supposed to do? This, you know, I'm talking to whoever's listening. I'm going to say the truth. How do we get through to people who are apathetic or just don't vote or don't see the urgency of the situation we're in?
I don't know I don't think you and I do, right? Because we're talking to the people. Those people are not tuning in. They're not reading my articles.
And they're not listening
to me. They're not tuning in here.
Right.
So what we can do, I believe, and you're out there doing it every day, I think we've got to, it's a little bit sort of like, I'm coming from having seen the storm, as they put it, really quite up close, at the point of a gun, you know? To sort of say it's there, left. You've got to, this question of, should we focus on Roe or economic issues? Yes. The answer is yes. Everything. It is popular front time. I just gave money to Tim Ryan in Ohio. That Ooh. Is not my kind of guy.
Mine
not
either.
My
right.
Kind of guy.
But you did. You got.
And I can't wait. I can't wait till the day that I can give money to someone challenging him from the left.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where we're at right now. And I know we've had those kinds of crying wolf for so much in American history. This election matters. All I can say is this time the guns are there in a way that they never have been right now. I think that has got to happen, and reassuring ourselves. One of the things I hear liberals sort of say, well, don't do any more bad news until after the election. We can't stand it. We're exhausted. I get it. It doesn't work that way, though. Just talking to a good friend in Georgia who's out there and saying, like, we are so exhausted. We don't have anything left. We've got to keep going. You know, Dunkirk said, wait a minute, everybody, whew, I am tuckered out. Let's just have a pause.
November
Germany's
9th.
Over there.
November 9th.
We don't have that. And we do have an energized right, because right now the fascists, and that's not even a term I used to use. And I would have argued with you some years ago, the American GOP has not always been fascist. It is
No,
now.
They are now. This is
they,
now.
They are now. This is a fascist party. And they are winning, no matter how much they win in this November or not, they are winning more than they ever thought they could win. That gives you tremendous energy. So they're working around the clock, but they got adrenaline. We're working around the clock and we're exhausted.
Yeah.
You know,
I think part of it maybe is that we're thinking as a parent. Look, I keep thinking I'm old. Thankfully, I'm not going to be here that much longer, but I've got a kid. You know, she's 23. And so I don't want to leave the world like this for her. We need to make it better. And I feel powerless because on the other side, you're right. They don't care about the issues. They don't care that their Senate candidate in Georgia, you know, is probably a CTE sufferer who got hit too many times at a football game, doesn't belong in the Senate. It doesn't matter.
Of course. I'm going to disagree with you there.
Okay.
He's going to do perfectly fine in the Senate. He's going to
vote. He'll follow the orders.
Look, he'll do what Mitch tells him to do. Mr. Smith goes to Washington illusion. Most of the politicians are there. They're told how to vote.
And they do.
I mean, this is not a dark conspiracy. This is how party politics works, right?
True.
Herschel will file the votes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And Mitch McConnell knows that. His only problem with Herschel is this makes it harder for Herschel to win. Now, is Herschel going to be writing any great legislation? No. But it doesn't matter. He's going, and they're speaking. When you go to the right wing media, that you see the folks who are sort of doing the defending line. Oh, he's fine. And then you see the folks like, yeah, he's terrible. Doesn't matter. And look, that's Tim Ryan too, right?
Right. You know? Well, and there was Dana Loesch, who was the spokeswoman for the NRA. She's a right wing media person. And she actually said the quiet part out loud the other day. She said, I don't care how many abortions he paid for. We need to get back control of the Senate, period. Right. It's about power.
Yeah. That's a reasonable, pragmatic decision. And where the left keeps getting stuck, they say, I can't believe she said that.
Right. She said it.
Of course she said it. And I know this because I've been writing about the family for so long. That's the family has always been pragmatic. And this has been their approach because they were a construct of the Cold War. They were the folks who built the relationships between the United States and so many of the world's worst dictators because it was convenient. They didn't have any illusions. Papa Doc Duvalier in Haiti, Suharto in India, these were brutal killers. They knew who they were, but they were good for big oil. They were good for policy. They're the ones who also say, look, God doesn't need saints. I mean, this is 6 years after Trump is elected that we are still stuck on the hypocrisy issue.
Someone like me, I can't put that into place. It just doesn't make sense for me.
It works. It makes perfect sense.
For them.
Mitch McConnell had a thing. He said, I want to get this done. I want to get these judges done. I want to get these laws passed. I need this tool, and this tool. Now, this tool, this Georgia Senator-shaped tool, I need it to press this button and vote this. That's all I need that tool to do. Whatever else about it, I don't care. See, in other words, we need a little bit of a more sophisticated approach to politics, a party approach to politics. Not personality driven, right?
Yeah.
This is what did us in. I'm going to argue now. I'm really going to upset people. This is what did us in. And I don't think there was any winning in Texas and Georgia. Stacey Abrams is going to lose. People get very angry at me when I say that.
She's not doing
Beto is going to lose. People say, no, just you got to keep going. No, we've got to say they're going to lose. Let's put our energy. Let's pay attention to
get behind people who can win.
Secretary of State.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
But some of those people are not as charismatic.
True.
And I know this is a right-wing talking point. They just like Stacey because she's charismatic. I've been traveling around. Wherever I go, I stop in nice little boutiques. I can get Stacey Abrams stickers. I can get a Stacey Abrams notebook and so on. That's not Stacey Abrams' fault. That's our fault.
Yeah.
That's our fault for saying, like, if I'm in Wisconsin, why the hell am I getting a Stacey Abrams sticker and not a Mandela Barnes yard sign?
Right.
If I'm in Georgia speaking to a friend of mine, why can't I get a yard sign? Because the Democratic Party down there, it's just astonishing, thinks, oh, wait a minute, it's a bunch of young folks. They're like, oh, we don't need yard signs. Everyone's online now.
Oh, yeah,
no, they're not. working class people, poor people, people who are working a lot. They have computers. They're not spending their time listening to your show, reading my stuff. Yard signs. It's boring. It's not sexy. It's not fun.
And talking to people and letting them know how important it is that they vote, because people don't. They don't take it seriously. And we've got to somehow, not just you and me, but everybody, have to let everybody else know how urgent it is. And I worry, okay, we're going to go into overtime for a few minutes, but I worry that we're blowing it by the apathetic nature of life today. People just don't get it. I'm not going to vote. My vote doesn't count. It doesn't matter. They both do the same thing. Well, this time, no, they don't. And maybe it's because for every election, we say this is the most important election of our lifetime, because at the time it is, but I don't think any of them have been as important as this one.
We need a massive campaign. I don't know what the slogan is, a variation of the campaign that Edwin Edwards used to defeat David Duke in Louisiana. I think Edwards had already been convicted of something then, and it's a bumper sticker that said, vote for the crook. You know, if it's a crook versus a Klansman, vote for the crook.
Right.
And because we can't go to these people and say, oh, no, this time it's going to be different. The Democratic Party is going to do great. And you'd say to those apathetic people, yeah, that's right. It does suck. This is a lousy damn choice.
We vote for the lesser of two evils. I fight with, Howie Klein is on the show every Thursday. He refuses to vote for the lesser of two evils. He lives in California. And I tell him, you can have that luxury. I live in Florida. I don't have that choice. I will vote for Charlie Crist, who is not my favorite, for a number of reasons, but he's okay. And next to Ron DeSantis, he's God. You know, we need Charlie Crist. We need to go in all in on Charlie Crist with everything we've got. Because frankly, if Charlie Crist doesn't win, we're moving. I'm leaving the state. Well, that's the other question. We were thinking going to Arizona. But if Carrie Lake wins and your guy wins, because my husband went to school there and his son went to school there and lives there. So we
It's a wonderful place, but it's...
Everything depends on what happens November 8th. That's when we decide where we're going.
I live in Vermont and I love Vermont. Lately, I was visiting Wisconsin and I love Wisconsin.
Too cold. We can't do cold.
but the thing is, I was like, I love Milwaukee. I wish I could live in Milwaukee. But I've got a queer kid and I can't take the risk of moving to a state where the legislature might outlaw my child.
Right.
And look, it's happening in Vermont, 30 miles from me. There's already these challenges and they're funded. We had at the high school right here, Turning Point USA.
Oh, yes.
Outside. And then they go into our high school. Oh, they're wandering around, this adult wandering around filming. And I'm like, you are exactly the predator you keep warning us about.
Yeah.
I think what people have to recognize is California, Vermont. I always think, and I know you got to go, but this is a good little bit. Years ago, I was doing a workshop with a great legendary activist and organizer named Suzanne Farr. Suzanne Farr was down there, I think in Arkansas or Alabama. She had a mostly queer, all women's commune, and they started getting women from the community coming to them for help, running away from domestic violence. And these women were tough, and you know, they protected them. They took no shit, you know? One of the young people there was like, oh, that was so great that you were able to give them a safe space. And Suzanne, who for all her toughness was a little bit like a Southern granny, said, oh, honey, there's no fucking safe spaces. And that is what we need. Right now, there are no safe spaces. California's not a safe space if Trump comes back. Vermont's not a safe space if Trump comes back. And right now, he's coming.
Yeah,
that train is on its way here. We can derail it, but we got to derail it.
That's the other thing. You believe that if something big doesn't change, he's going to be in office in 2025.
Well, you've seen the polling. I don't know if all your audience has. Right now, if the election was today, he'd win 48-46.
Oh my God.
That's before the campaign. And don't fool yourself. Trump is a better campaigner than Biden. And the election's not going to be fair if those Secretary of State in Arizona, in Nevada, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania. Doesn't matter.
That's the point that people need to pay attention to. That's the important thing. They're putting these election deniers 299 of them are running on the Republican side. Many of them will win because some of them are unopposed because the Democrats didn't put anybody up to run for Secretary of State to protect our elections. And if they get in, they will do what the people wouldn't do in 2020, and they will fix the election to get the Republicans in power. And then it's too late.
And Brian Kemp will, you know, Brian Kemp, people look at Georgia. Well, Brian Kemp did the right thing. He did the right thing. He didn't want to break the law. He didn't want to get in trouble. So what did Brian Kemp do in Georgia, governor of Georgia? He changed the law. Right. He's not going to have to break the law in 24.
No, because the law is written for him to do what he did. They have Greg Palast has a new movie coming out that's called Vigilante, which is about this new law that they put through where anybody is like the Texas abortion law. Anybody can challenge anybody else's vote, and people are challenging tens of thousands of votes of that they have no idea because someone told them, here, you challenge these 32,000 ballots, and they do. They don't know what they're doing. They're following the directions that they're told to do to steal the election, while all the time they say we're stopping the steal. Because that's opposite world.
It's dark. But don't people got to say, like, now you've got to fight like your life depending on, like, oh, this makes my head hurt. I'm just going to, boy, I live in a nice community. I'm just going to tune out. Yeah,
no, you got to vote.
Nice community.
Vote like your life depends on it, because it does.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the slogan. Vote like your life depends on it, because it does.
Exactly.
And your kids' lives depend on it even more than ours, because we're old. I'm old.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not old. I'm older. Jeff Charlotte, I can't wait to read the new book. Do you have any? I know I always love seeing your stuff in Vanity Fair because you do these great articles that just stay with you. Do you have anything coming up, or you're just all in on the book?
I think a piece of the book is coming out in Vanity Fair pretty soon, which is I talked about Wisconsin. What I did in the aftermath of Roe was travel all over Wisconsin and spend a lot of time talking mostly to fascists and also to some leftists. I mean, you know, the thing that gets me worried is there's guns everywhere. There's guns on the left too. And I talk to those folks as well. So that piece should come out maybe soon called The Great Acceleration, which, you know, some folks know is acceleration is a term that began on the left and has been taken over on the right to describe what they're trying to do now.
Wow.
Accelerating the collapse.
Wow. You know, one more thing just popped into my head. Of course, the news today of the verdict against Alex Jones, $965 million. But did you see what his reaction was? He was on the air while the verdict, while the awards were being announced. And he's gone, 120 million, 57 million. Yeah, they think they're going to get anything. And then he said something to the effect of, they think we're going to stop. They think I'm going to shut up about Uvalde and Parkland. They got another thing coming. They don't care. They keep going. So we're up against a weird
horse. We do too.
This book happens to be in my room with me, just another book to recommend, because Jeff Charlotte does all this great, you teach literary nonfiction writing. That's a perfect description, right? But you also, you get at the heart of people. And this was this book called This Brilliant Darkness, A Book of Strangers. You traveled across the country and you took pictures and met people and told stories and you photographed them. And it's just wonderful. And sometimes you need an escape from this brilliant darkness. Check it out.
I don't know how much of an escape that book is, but yeah.
It's something different. It's not, you know, Trump, and it's not. Anyway, it's great. It's just
thank you, Nicole.
Different.
I appreciate that.
Jeff Charlotte, I'm such a fan of yours. Thank you for jumping on with us today. I really appreciate it. Always love talking to you. You
all
take
right,
care, bye-bye. And let's, we got a month. Let's do something. All right. All right.
Sounds
thanks, good. Jeff. Bye-bye. Jeff Charlotte. Again, find him on Twitter at Jeff Charlotte. Again, he's writing regularly at Vanity Fair these days. Read Jeff Charlotte. And if you haven't read, you know, The Family or C Street or This Brilliant Darkness, do check him out. He's that good. And he writes just beautifully. Okay. With that, we're done. Tomorrow, I have to send Howie an email and cancel tomorrow because we're going to be all in on the hearing. So I will tape it. It starts at 1 Eastern. We go on at 5. I will pull clips throughout the day while I can. You know, it's going to be my typical frantic, hectic thing here, but we'll carry it for as long as it's on. I have a feeling they'll end right before we go on the air. So I'll try to have stuff and invite your calls to talk about it. We have the weight of the world on our shoulders, and it is up to us to make sure that the unthinkable doesn't happen. So, you know, we got a month, everybody, a month. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Tell a friend to come hang with us. And I thank you so much for doing so. Thanks for supporting the show. I'll see you tomorrow. Keep the faith, everyone, or whatever it is you believe. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Over the weekend at a private fundraiser, President Biden reportedly warned attendees that the risk of nuclear Armageddon was at the highest point in 60 years. But during a sit-down interview with CNN that aired Tuesday, the president said that he doesn't think Putin will resort to using tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine. In fact, he said he didn't believe that Putin was irrational.
I think he is a rational actor who's miscalculated significantly.
Biden also said that Saudi Arabia would face consequences for joining Russia in an oil production cut that will likely push gas prices higher. Regarding the predictions of a recession, the president said, quote, I don't think there will be a recession. If it is, it will be a very slight recession. Okay. President Biden also spoke for the first time about possible charges against his son, Hunter Biden, for alleged tax crimes and making a false statement on a gun purchase application. And he said he was proud of his son for fighting drug addiction. You know, while we're on the subject, the right-wing hate media has been obsessing on Hunter Biden for years now, though I still don't find enough to their story to even report on their claims. However, this week, the Fox Not News channel and their star, Sean Hannity, have been sharing a 2018 voicemail message from then-private citizen Joe Biden to his son Hunter. They mocked it. They showed a Chyron with a transcription of this conversation. And I'm trying to figure out their point.
It's Dad. I called to tell you I love you. I love you more than the whole world, pal. Can I get some help? I don't know what to do. I know you don't either. But I'm here no matter what you need. No matter what you need, I love you.
If the point Fox and Sean Hannity was trying to make was to show that Joe Biden is the kind of dad we should all want or aspire to be, then good work. Somehow I don't think that's what they were aiming for, which makes it all the more reprehensible. In other news, a new report from the Wall Street Journal says that more than 2,600 officials at federal agencies have owned or traded stocks affected by their agency's decisions in the past 6 years. Wow. The trading reportedly took place in the executive branches of both Republican and Democratic administrations. Go figure. The journal said it reviewed financial disclosure forms for about 12,000 senior career employees and political appointees from 2016 through 2021. The documents included data on more than 315,000 stock, bond, and fund trades made by the officials or close family members. The review found that more than five dozen officials at five agencies traded stock in companies shortly before their departments hit the firms with enforcement actions, and that one in three senior EPA officials had investments in companies lobbying the Environmental Protection Agency. Disturbing, right? Well, now would be a good time to mention that there are a few bills that have been introduced that would limit members of Congress from trading and owning stock. In fact, there was supposed to be a vote on one of them before Congress went on recess, but it was pulled. It's future uncertain. But what we do know is that there's only a very limited amount of time in the lame duck session where they can possibly put anything through. On January 3rd, the 118th Congress convenes and they start over from scratch.
good luck to all of us. And along those same lines, you know, tomorrow is the final public hearing before Election Day of the House Select Committee investigating all things January 6th. That committee will dissolve at the end of the 117th Congress at the end of this year. So the road forward is dependent on which party controls the House and which party controls the Senate. Good luck to us all. Oh, and vote. The Justice Department investigation will continue as the administration is still in power for the next 2 years, but the former guy is pulling out all the stops to delay those proceedings. The Justice Department on Tuesday asked the Supreme Court to reject a petition from the former guy's attorneys to let an outside special master review those classified documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago. The Justice Department saying Trump has no plausible claim to ownership of the materials and that allowing the special master he requested to examine the documents would irreparably injure the government. Trump, claiming that the Justice Department is treating him unfairly, has asked the High Court to reverse part of an appeals court order granting a Justice Department request to separate the classified material from other documents being reviewed by the special master. Oh, enough already. We expect a ruling anytime. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.